Welcome back, everybody, into Bills Chat. I am Josh McCarty. With me tonight, as always, is Luca. Luca, this coming Tuesday, the calendar turns over to April, which means the draft month is here. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I love draft season, Josh. I love it so much. This is our NFL Christmas season. I'm feeling good. And we've kind of gotten out of the, we're starting our new season. And there's nothing like starting a new season with the draft. That is, if there's one sport where it truly feels like Christmas comes early and everything starts from there, it is the NFL and the draft. And I'm excited to be sitting here where we're going to kind of kick off our look forward to the prospects and everything when it comes to the 2025 NFL draft.
And tonight on this podcast, we're going to focus primarily on the defensive line prospects in this draft, because there is a very large depth of talent at defensive end, defensive tackle. That is where the massive amount of talent is on the defensive side of the ball in this draft. But we are going to get to some Bills news that happened before that. And I do want to ask Luca a couple of bigger picture draft questions for the Bills, too, as we get rolling here. But Luca, we have some Bills news to get to. It was announced over the weekend that Bills cornerback Christian Benford and the Buffalo Bills have agreed to a 4-year, $76 million extension, which comes well below some of the other extensions we had seen on the market this offseason. Don't know if that is because of some concerns about his concussion issues, or if he just gave him a hometown discount because he's a fourth round pick and he just wanted to cash in now instead of playing it out another year. But this is a guy you were crushing on from the very first time you laid eyes on him in preseason, his rookie year. I know you were elated when this news came across.
It's one of those things where the news came and I immediately thought about that Indianapolis Colts preseason game. And when I joked with you even going into that when I was there with a friend, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to actually do something that I never do and watch a preseason game. We come back and circle back to record, and I tell you all about this guy wearing 47. I'm like, who in the world is this Christian Benford guy? Because I love him. I love everything about his game. It's not one of those kind of players, and he's not, and this shouldn't be a spoiler for anyone, but he's not the flashiest of individual, and he doesn't do anything where it's like he can gain. He's not a game breaker. I wouldn't put him in the, just to put him in the same draft class. He's not like a Trent McDuffie, right? Who was taken before Kyler Elam, but he does everything you ask him to be or ask him to do and some, and on top of it, he does it at an extremely high level, night in, night out, when he's available, which is a little bit of an asterisk. But overall, to see him get locked in for $19 million annually over 4 years, when you were seeing the likes of the Carolina DB, who's blanking me, J.C. Horn, who gets $25 million a year. You see another one of my draft crushes, Derek Stingley Jr., get $30 million a year, almost all guaranteed. I at least for myself, I was starting to worry that, unfortunately, Christian Benford was pricing himself out of the market, that the Bills would be willing to pay someone like that. And then you see this return and you see this extension where it comes in at $19 million a year over 4 years. And it really feels like one of those contracts where, I'm not saying this is actually what happened, but it feels like one of those ones where at least Bean and just the masterclass of the front office was able to hold over these things, like maybe the uncertainty of their availability, and or they were technically a day three pick. If you meet us a little bit in the way here, median, hey, we can make something happen for you. And he was happy to do so and happy to remain here as a Bill. Whatever the case was, for him to sign the dotted line, for him to be that $19 million a year, for him to be 4 years, $76 million, what a deal. Grinning ear to ear when I saw that news. I mean, I put out a post to announce something else about our own channel at the time. And as I posted that, Josh, I see the alert just coming through with Schefter and everything like that on our X or Twitter account. And I see that Christian Benford extended. One of the happiest memories I have of recent. That was incredible news. I will say, I immediately started looking for the ability of how I can figure out to add maybe to this blank, wrong shoulder, this blank wall space here. We'll get over here. Maybe a Christian Benford item needs to be up there, because we've been talking about it at length for years, and he's one of my crushes, just like a Terrence McGee, for different reasons, but ultimately it's like, I need something with Benford represented because I love this guy and I'm so happy that he's going to be remaining as a Bill for the foreseeable future.
He doesn't have the same personality as Tre'Davious White, but I think they both approach the position similarly. Like, they both are better in a zone scheme. I think they both were drafted to the right situation. I don't know that either one of those guys at their peak would be considered shutdown corners if they were in more of a man heavy situation. But they are the perfect fit for a Sean McDermott defense. And, you know, that draft class where the Bills took Kyrie Elam in the first round, they had Christian Benford in the sixth round out of Villanova. One of those guys gets a massive contract this offseason. The other one traded for peanuts, but you never know. We're going to talk with a lot of certainty tonight about draft prospects, and you just never know. But it's been a productive offseason for Brandon Bean and the Bills. Got long-term deals done with Gregory Rousseau, Khalil Shakir, Christian Benford. Who am I forgetting? There's one. Oh, Terrell Bernard. Mm-hmm. So there's one name missing from that list that I think a lot of folks thought might could get a deal. Maybe perhaps because he's been a little outspoken on Twitter, X, Instagram, whatever you want. James Cook. James Cook has not gotten a deal done yet, Luca. And it's always a tricky conversation when it comes to running backs. I will just tell you, I thought you'd asked me a year ago, I'd say, I don't care how good James Cook plays. I'm not paying him. I'm not going to pay him market value. We'll find somebody else. This doesn't need to be a running back centric offense. But I thought James Cook took such a massive leap last year that it became a conversation to me. I'm not overly excited about making him the next Saquon Barkley money wise. I don't think he's that kind of player, but the improvement he showed in his contact balance, his burst through the hole, his decisiveness. And I still think there's still a lot of meat on the bone for him to become more of a weapon in the passing game. I'm very excited about his future. But it sounds like Brandon Bean speaking today to the media, the sides are not close. And Brandon Bean did not shy away from that. And it sounds like, at least for now through the draft, do not anticipate seeing a James Cook deal coming down the pike. What do you make of what's going on with James Cook?
I respect what Bean's doing in this approach. And effectively, I wouldn't say he's laying the onus and pressure on James Cook's camp, because I don't think there's really pressure on their camp to do anything. But ultimately, he's just standing his ground, of course. And effectively, he is saying, like, hey, you can do what you do when it comes to social media and your representatives laying pressure on us to understand where your value is. But at the end of the day, that's not going to affect our decision-making and how we evaluate your position, your value to the team, and what we believe you're worth to be as an individual. And I had this conversation with you just before we started recording, and I think it's valid, and I love that we're talking about this. It's one of those things where I genuinely believe, at least this is now me personally, where if they were to fold, and the market seems to be around that just north of $20 million a year for James Cook, if they were to fold and pay him around that ballpark, you are, in my opinion, essentially conceding the fact that you will not be paying a top-end pass catcher or a wide receiver one, we'll call it, in this offense for the foreseeable future while James Cook is on that contract. Why I say that is because it just feels like it would be impossible to do so in the current cap structure and everything of such with Josh Allen. And at the end of the day, if you're Bean, if you're myself, you know, whoever it is, and you evaluate this roster with where it is, do you believe a James Cook at 20 plus million and, or let's say eventually a wide receiver one, whether that be Keon Coleman developing into that role and or acquiring another one via what, however you do it, at the 30 plus million mark, because that's generally what you're going to have to be at this moment in time, what is going to be more impactful? I still find it very hard to believe that you can't make it work without a James Cook and with that impact number one receiver, because you can't have both. And I think being very firm on this stance with a James Cook, as much as I like him as a player, is very, very good in the sense of just understanding true net worth, what a positional value is. And ultimately, it's like, hey, you are not Jahmyr Gibbs. You are not Saquon Barkley. You are not Bijan Robinson. I feel like those three individuals, a healthy Christian McCaffrey can, of course, be in that conversation, but that feels like that's in the rearview mirror at this moment in time. But you're not up that you're not up there at that elite echelon. You are almost that next guy, that next tier. And if that were to be the case, ultimately, in my opinion, would you rather live in the reality where you have a $30+ million receiver and pass catcher for Josh Allen for the years to come, which is one that I would rather live in, or a $20+ million running back who may affect the game at a high level, but we're still uncertain is a Saquon, Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs level takeover of a game where you can easily justify that cost because they are just, as we'll call it, an offensive weapon of that elite level that you can justify the cost. I personally respect Bean for standing his ground, simply just kind of understanding the positional value and just realistically looking at it as, hey, we are happy enough to go into the year that is remaining on your contract. We will see what happens. And ultimately, if from there we can get to a number that we can both agree on, great. If not, that's fine, because we don't want to pigeonhole ourselves where, it, as I'm saying, just in my opinion, if you were to pay a James Cook $20+ million, you ultimately are really taking yourself out of the ability to then have that number one pass catcher, unless the cap were to do something that we cannot forecast. But ultimately, you're taking yourself out of that market to pay someone to be that number one elite pass catcher and move forward to have that weapon in your arsenal with a Josh Allen. Let's not forget, number 17 runs this offense, a Josh Allen-led offense that will ultimately take over and take it from here.
You know, I think what you bring up about the receiver is interesting, because the counterpoint would be, well, those guys don't grow on trees. But in a lot of ways, I don't want the Bills to stop looking for those guys. And I think that's where your point is if you sink the money into James Cook, does that make the Bills less aggressive to find a weapon on the outside? Because when you look at their wide receiver group right now, to me, it resembles the group prior to adding what we thought Amari Cooper was at the trade deadline last year. You have Khalil Shakir, who's a nice piece for sure. You have Keon Coleman, who's an interesting lotto ticket that showed some flashes last year, but didn't really stand out as rookie year. You have Curtis Samuel, who did next to nothing last season for the Bills. And then you have Josh Palmer, who, you know, he's Josh Palmer. I don't know. I know there's a segment of Bills fans who are super excited because he has good route running ability and that some of the metrics like his route running, but he's Josh Palmer. I think the Bills definitely need another alpha wide receiver. So I'm not in favor of being the team that pays B-level running backs A-level money. And I'm not saying James Cook is a B-level running back, but I think when you look at the elite running backs in this league, you're talking about Derrick Henry, you're talking about Saquon Barkley. I might draw the line there. I know Bijan Robinson's a guy that came in with a lot of hype, but that might be where I draw the line. And everybody else to me is just, they're part of an offense and maybe they're a productive part of the offense. But I think we saw it in the Jets game on Thursday Night Football, or Monday Night Football, I guess it was, where James Cook was out, Ray Davis and Ty Johnson did just fine. So I don't want to see this offense without James Cook, but I don't know that I necessarily need James Cook to be making $25 million a year either. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Maybe the draft will give us a clue, though, because James Cook is going into the final year of his deal. Luca, you keep telling me this is a great running back class beyond the top guy, who we all know is Genty. But I think if the Bills were to go on, say, day two and add another running back, that would be a pretty good idea that they might be out of the James Cook business. I don't necessarily anticipate that happening, but I think that would be a clue. Speaking of clues, do you have any thought right now, Luca, if I had to put a gun to your head and say, tell me right now, Bills first round draft pick, offense or defense, not what Luca would do, what the Bills will do, what do you think it's going to be?
I think I'm lesser than the average person on if I understand where it's going to go. I believe it would lean defense. I just think overall, I say that though, because I think it's going to be a defensive draft as a whole. Yeah, I mean, the Bills are sitting here with 10 picks, and I would tell you at least six of them are probably going to be defensive players. And that's just from the reality of the holes are more apparent on defense than offense, right? Yeah. And it's just the depth isn't there on defense, and you have to fill those voids. So that's where I would lean, even in the first round alone. But ultimately, I think it's lesser known than the average individual thinks, as we're kind of like leaning into where we're going to discuss tonight and the position group we are kind of about to discuss. I don't know if it's as known, or I don't think you should be as comfortable to assume that it's going to be something as certain as the defensive side of the ball.
So for me, I would be pretty confident it's defense. This is not what I would do. I would be absolutely open to and in favor of taking a wide receiver and adding it to this mix and continuing to stockpile weapons. I know your last two draft picks, the first ones you made were Keon Coleman, wide receiver, and Dalton Kincaid, tight end slash hybrid receiver. But you can never have enough weapons in my book. And I think neither one of those guys, I think so far, have lived up to expectations. And I would be all in favor of the Bills continuing to add to this wide receiver group. But the reason why I say defense, Luke, is I have a hard time finding any position other than wide receiver where they could realistically take a shot in the first round. When you think about what you're wanting out of a first round pick to come in and probably start or at least compete for playing time, well, the offensive line is set. Perhaps you could find a guard to come in and compete with David Edwards, but Connor McGovern is locked in at center. No rookie in this class is coming in and unseating Spencer Brown or Deion Dawkins. That's not going to happen. James Cook, if he's here, is going to be the guy at running back. Ty Johnson is a guy that they think is the best third down running back in the league. Josh Allen is obviously locked in at quarterback, and Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox are just fine at tight end. So you're not going to spend a first round pick on a fullback. I have a hard time thinking you're going to spend one on a guard. So to me, it's either the Bills take a swing at wide receiver or they start addressing some of the holes on defense. And when I look at what's going on at cornerback, where right now, if the season started today, it's Jamarcus Ingram or Dane Jackson starting opposite Christian Benford. Yikes. I think that there's a segment of Bills fans, and I might throw myself in this mix, that view the Bills defensive line as underwhelming, but we're going to get into tonight what we think that the Bills might think of their defensive line, but you can certainly add pieces there. Matt Milano's not getting any younger. Taron Johnson's not getting any younger. And I think you could even make an interesting case for a position like safety, where the Bills either have some guys that were average at best last year, or a guy like Cole Bishop, who, you know, you hope he comes on this year, but you might want to add a little bit more to the pipeline. That's where I lean defense, Luca. Defensive line specifically, it feels like a perfect storm where this draft is loaded with defensive line talent. And we look at this Bills team and we're thinking, boy, oh boy, they need an edge. They need a space-eating defensive tackle. Come on down, big old defensive lineman. Brandon Bean's going to grab one in the first round, maybe another in the second round, definitely another one on day two, and he's going to address these needs. I am not convinced that the Bills view their defensive line situation as the problem that many fans do. Now, I will tell you, I watched every Bills game just like many of you did. If you're listening to Bills Chat, if you're watching Bills Chat, first of all, thank you. We appreciate you. But we assume that if you're going out of your way in April to take Bills content in, that you're probably somebody that watches the games or at least has a good grasp of what's going on with this team. And I certainly, like you, saw many teams run the ball down the Bills' throat. And there was many times last season where I thought, boy, it would be nice to have a big space-eating defensive tackle right up the middle, you know, in the name of like a Ted Washington or a Casey Hampton. We're kind of going back in time there. But Luca, the more I've thought about this, and let's just talk about defensive tackle for this moment, I'm not convinced that the Bills view it that way. I would love to see a big 330-pound nose tackle come in that just requires double teams on every snap. And if you don't double team them, the inside run is absolutely shut down. And it leaves Terrell Bernard, Matt Milano, and Taron Johnson clean to run free after the running back. But that's not the style of defense that these Bills play. Look no further than the fact that Puna Ford was on this roster 2 years ago and couldn't even get a jersey on game day. Puna Ford, who is widely considered one of the better nose tackles in the sport these days. I think that the Bills look at what they have with Ed Oliver, a third round pick they spent last year in Dwayne Carter. They still have Daquan Jones under contract, and they went out and they spent free agent money on Larry Ogunjobi. Now he does have a 6-game suspension. We'll see what happens there, but I could see them adding to the mix at defensive tackle, you know, day two, day three for sure. I don't view this as a situation where I don't think that the Bills are going to view defensive tackle as a primary need unless, and you talk about this all the time, when they're on the clock, the value of the player that's still there is just so far and away above everything else that they can't pass it up.
Yeah, the last point you bring up is always the asterisk. In any discussion of any position, of any pick we ever could discuss, if the value is just too good, throw caution to the wind, just take the dang guy and move on and figure it out, right? That, and I always believe that the Bean regime, man, that sounds pretty good off the tongue. The Bean regime is one that lives through that, right? It's value matters the most, and make sure you get the best guy there. And if there just so happens to be someone of too good a value, which I think is kind of going back into it, someone like a Greg Rousseau checked the box for them in that regard, where that was just, it was too good to be good, too good to be true on their value chart, as well as that was also a position in need. So it just was a perfect marriage at that moment in time. Greg Rousseau made a lot of sense. I don't know. I'm with you on this point, though, when it comes to the position group. I don't know if defensive tackle and or nose tackle, more specifically, is one that is as prioritized by the Bills and Bean and McDermott as it feels like the outside world is. And you see all these mocks with a Kenneth Grant going to them 30th overall. And you look at the nose tackle slash D tackle position group as a whole, you know, outside of Mason Graham, who's going to be a top 10 pick, of course, out of Michigan. You look at all the others and all of these 300 pound plus guys that really are kind of that 1T, 3T hybrid style nose tackle. There's not any of your small defensive tackles, your pass rush athletic style guys like your Kalijah Kancey's, your Ed Oliver's, anything like that. It does feel like this draft has all of your Walter Nolan's, your Kenneth Grant's, your Derek Harmon's, all of these guys, 300 plus pounds, big kind of stuffing style defensive tackles. These don't feel as necessarily as kind of eye-opening need kind of guys to the regime that's currently in place. So I will be fascinated to see when it comes to draft night on if they truly value that style player all of a sudden in year, what is this, Josh, year 8 now with McDermott, you know, going into it, is there finally going to be that shift where, okay, we do need to get that 1T, that true dominant 1T nose tackle style defensive tackle, or are we just going to keep going with the same formula where you go under the assumption that more times than not, you're going to have a lead with Josh Allen. You're going to be able to kind of pin your ears back a little bit more than usual and ultimately be able to dominate with speed and size with that athleticism rather than the size and just pure girth when it comes to just the bulkiness of your defensive line. It's one of those kind of perfect storm combinations where you ultimately at the end of the day, don't know what's going to be needed come the tough games and the games you need to win the most. But also I know I've mentioned it to you. You're playing your Vegas Raiders. You play your Tennessee Titans. You play those teams. You're going to dominate. You're going to be able to do well. But when the games get tough and you're playing your Ravens, your Chiefs, your everything else, it does feel like it would be nice to have that 1T, that run stuff, or that guy who can dominate the defensive line a little bit more from the interior, as well as just dominate the defensive line as a whole more. And you're going into a draft now, as we're about to discuss here, that realistically, it's a fairly deep class that ultimately you should be able to find one of these guys that can bolster that unit as a whole and really elevate it to another level.
I might say that if the Bills were to go defensive line in the first round, that they would go edge over defensive tackle. And again, I think as somebody that watched this team, well, I watched a lot of these games wishing the Bills had better edge presence. I watched a lot of these games wishing the Bills had better defensive line in general. I think when you look at what the Eagles did to the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, the lesson isn't like, hey, the Eagles have, you know, six guys that after the fact are like first round caliber defensive linemen on their front. It's the fact that that was a Chiefs offensive line that was very gettable. And the Eagles are certainly the best team in the league to get them. But the Bills didn't get them at all. And it's now two out of the last 3 years we've seen the Bills go up against in the playoffs a very gettable defense offensive line, and the defensive line couldn't do anything. This year against the Chiefs, 2 years ago against the Bengals when they had three backups starting. I would love to see the Bills get an edge rusher. I do think that's probably at least in the conversation for the Bills, particularly with how I see some of these guys falling. We'll get into that tonight. I think there's some guys the Bills are going to have a lot of interest in. But yeah, I feel like, well, right now they have a glaring need at cornerback. If they don't go out and bring back Rasul Douglas before the draft, I feel like it's going to be hard for me to not think that they're going to do whatever they can to get a cornerback in the draft. It's going to feel a lot like the Kyir Elam draft, where we all went into that thinking, oh my God, you need a cornerback. And then the risk you run is you draft one, it could turn out to be Kyir Elam and he can't play in the league. I guess the trick is just find one in the sixth round that becomes an all pro. But I think an edge, I know they just signed Rousseau to an extension. I know they brought in Joey Bosa to a one-year deal. They did sign Michael Hoyt. I feel like I'm starting to talk myself out of edge a little bit. They do have Javon Solomon as kind of like their developmental prospect and you know, in the pipeline. And then they still have AJ Epinesa, who, for lack of sack production is a guy that they clearly like. I mean, the cupboard's kind of full there. So we shall see. But Luca, this is a loaded defensive line class. I'm going to let you decide where to start, whether it's edge, whether it's defensive tackle, or whether it's just a couple of the names at the top. You've already talked about Mason Graham. And then there's obviously one edge that stands out above the rest. Do you want to talk about some of these elite tippy top guys that the Bills aren't even going to be able to sniff, and just do a quick little rundown about what makes them so special and why on our live draft show, by the way, we'll be talking about those guys pretty early in the evening on Thursday, Abdul Carter and Mason Graham.
No, I don't think there's need to talk about Abdul Carter, AKA Darth Vader, and Mason Graham. The defensive tackle, one of the defensive tackles. It's pretty wild that there's two defensive tackles out of one school, that being Michigan, that are regarded as first round talents. It feels like an Alabama style thing, but those two individuals are, it's not even head and shoulders, miles ahead of a class that is actually, as you said, a very deep one going into this draft. This is a very trenches, but I mean, it's not even trenches. It's defensive line driven draft, where when we are live on Thursday, April 24th. And we are live watching the first round. I expect a multitude of defensive line players to go off, and I'm just not sure where that will be. The two individuals we will be certain that are coming off the board very quick. Abdul Carter being, I would be shocked if not in the top three. I personally would say the top one, but top two in all reality. And then Mason Graham will be a top 10 pick for sure. Those are dominant, just game breaker style players that will absolutely are more of your sure thing day one. Come in, impact players, they are going to be something. And Darth Vader being Abdul Carter, especially, he's got all the makings of being that kind of Micah Parsons, which is the classic, hey, Penn State, small edge, just, I mean, small, 6'3", 259. Didn't realize that's small these days. Small. But
we look at him in the gym and we're not going within 10 feet of him, but yeah, he's small.
Small edge guy. He will dominate day one right out the gate. He will be phenomenal. And Mason Graham, I mean, for being, as I'm looking here, 320 listed, 6'3", this guy plays big and he dominates. He always gets that first step push, and it's just, he's incredible when it comes to being an anchor of the interior defensive line. So those two guys separate the rest. Now, where everyone else will kind of fall, that's where things get interesting. Where that gets interesting, especially for the Bills, is when it comes to your argument, like you said, where if they were to go defensive line, will they find themselves going edge or interior? Because realistically, there's a good chance for either of those position groups to really be the one that they end up with at it. Let's just go under the assumption they're at pick 30. You see boards out there. You see people that believe a James Pierce Jr., not that he's someone that I believe the Bills would be interested in, but someone that was viewed as a top 10 pick going into this college football season, all of a sudden falling out of the first round, is Shamar Stewart, someone where it's, you know, all of the athletic gifts you could possibly ask for, mm-hmm. but doesn't really have kind of the tape to go with it.
Any of it.
Yeah, like none of it. And just there's a lot of guys like that. And then the Kenneth Grant, the Robin to Mason Graham's Batman. And it's like, hey, he's a dominant interior defensive lineman as well. But ultimately, it's like, where is he wrecking it? Is he doing it thanks to Mason Graham? And or just kind of where does he fit in the shape of the NFL and the climate? So ultimately, you know, you have these edge guys that we just discussed. You have these interior defensive linemen. And realistically, in my opinion, and this is just, let me say it one more time for the people way back there listening on Friday evenings for whatever reason, even though they know our podcast drops Monday mornings. I believe, in my opinion, that there are at least, and I genuinely mean this, I believe there are at least 12 defensive linemen in this draft class that are absolutely worth to take in the first round. And that's how deep I believe it is. But at the same time, I think from 3 to 12, I genuinely don't know where you would put them. And I don't mean that as if 3 would fall to 12 all of a sudden. But what I mean by that is there's going to be a lot of fluctuation where, let's say, a James Pierce or a Shamar Stewart could necessarily not be that 3-4, but instead be that 9-10, and all of a sudden a Kenneth Grant flies up, and or a Walter Nolan, someone I mentioned earlier, something like that, where I think there's tiers to this, but at the same time, they're all so tight that there will be a lot of variance in the end that it's all going to come down to teams' boards and who they like the most, and you're going to probably have wild cards like the Raiders, not saying that the Raiders are going to go defensive line, but you know when they would draft the Leatherwoods of the world, that just screws up everyone anyways.
Yeah,
that I don't know where ultimately anyone's gonna fall, and that's where it's gonna be a fascinating one. That for the Bills, I truly believe that if defensive line, let's just live in the reality, since that's the position group we're going to discuss, if defensive line is truly the 1A 1B that the Bills are eyeing come draft night, that's one where there's zero need to trade up. You sit at 30, you see what falls to you, and you take the best player on your board at 30 because you're probably getting a very good player at that point in time.
I think it'd be fascinating to see where the Bills would have a player like James Pierce rated, because in my mind, he's a guy that they would not be overly interested in. Now, the thing that the Bills value in their defensive linemen is they want them to be able to stop the run. And interestingly enough, despite his smaller stature and smaller build, James Pierce is actually decent against the run. But he's just so light, especially on his lower half, that it will bring back some PTSD to some Bills fans that remember the Aaron Maben draft pick where he shows up to training camp. They passed on Brian Arakpo, and you're looking at him, you're like, who's that wide receiver? James Pierce is a guy that a year ago I could have told you could be the number one pick in this draft, and you might have thought that was realistic, and he just did not have the season at Tennessee that a lot of people thought. I want to make one more point about Mason Graham just really quick. I was listening to a podcast over the weekend. I'm not going to say which one because it wasn't one of the like Bills content creators, just FYI. And they were trying to find a reason to dislike him. And they were like, well, he doesn't do anything special. Like, he's strong enough to play the nose, but he's also versatile enough to play the 3. He's probably athletic enough to kick outside. I mean, he could play in any scheme. And I'm just sitting here like, yeah, exactly. Ding, ding, ding. Like, imagine I tell you on draft night that when all these other teams are going to draft, you know, either they're going to get Trent McDuffie or they're going to get Kyir Elam. Like, you're going to get a guy that you feel really darn sure is going to be a 10-year starter for you and probably a multi-time Pro Bowler. Yeah, that's the special thing. Like, that's what you want. So I that's an aside. He's not going to be somebody that the Bills get a chance on. His running mate, Kenneth Grant, could be,
you know,
but
you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of when people are trying to figure out a way to why Aiden Hutchinson wasn't the best player in his draft.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And the funny part is they're both Michigan guys too, but ultimately it's like, oh, I don't know, man, this guy, like, oh, you could play him on that interior speed package. You could do this. He's a great run stopper. He obviously sets the edge real well, but what is he really great at? What is he exceptional at? And it's like, football. He's pretty great at everything.
Man, pretty good at everything. Like,
What an exceptional trait that is. Like, I'm okay with understanding, hey, you're only good at everything at best. I'm okay with being like, oh, you're not good enough. But it's like when you're really fucking good at a lot of things, if not great at a lot of things, it's like, no, that just means you're really good at football. Like, yeah, I'll happily take you with a top three, top five, top seven pick and just move on with my day. That's what Mason Graham reminds me of.
Yeah. And I don't think that the Bills have to necessarily worry about him being there. No. I want to talk about a guy that I think is going to be very much on the Bills' radar, especially at edge. He just, to me, he checks a lot of boxes that the Bills like. He's not my favorite prospect. In fact, there's a guy that went to his school that I like better. Now, he's not a system fit for the Bills, but I'm talking about Mykel Williams. The guy that I like better is Jelon Walker. Every time you watched Georgia play, he popped off the screen. Now, if you watch the Texas game, Georgia, Texas, these guys single-handedly cost me a lot of money that night. Nobody cares about that, but they made it to where it didn't matter whether it was Arch or Quinn Ewers in there. There was no time to pass whatsoever. It looked like men against boys out there. And I'm talking about Mykel Williams specifically for the Bills. Even though I like Jelon Walker better as a college player, when you're talking about projecting to the NFL, I think if he's going to be an edge rusher, it's more of like that 3-4 outside linebacker. Mykel Williams, to me, has the long arms, 6'5", 265, does not have great pass rush production, but I think he has the necessary traits that NFL defensive line coaches look at and say, I can get a special player out of that. I think if he's there when the Bills pick at 30, that's right, 30, he's going to be a player that they look long and hard at. Now, you know, there's other positions there. Who knows what happens at cornerback? I think everything about him, from his size to his athletic prototype to everything he brings there, I think he's a guy that could even go in the top 20 because, like Luca mentioned, after the first couple, just shake them up, see whatever order they come out. It really depends on who's picking where. That's a guy. I don't love him, but I think the Bills absolutely could love him, Luca.
So Mykel Williams or Mykel Williams or however you need to say it, want to say it. I mean, it's one of those ones where when they spell their name M-Y-K-E-L, it's like, yeah. I don't know how I'm supposed to say this. So I'm looking
for, you think you're better than me with your funky spelling.
Yeah. But ultimately at the end of the day, I'm waiting for the media guide to put it out. And it's like, okay, that's how you say it. But when Williams is drafted, I'm very curious, but also I'm with you. He's one of those ones. How do I say this? He goes back to, like, you know, when you and I have that discussion all the time about who ultimately are the Bills going to take in the first round? What do they look for that they take in the first round? And it's checks box one, checks box two, checks box three, checks box four, checks box five. The only one of these boxes that I don't know of yet are a top 30 visit, but he checks every other box. It's, you know, athletically gifted, under 21 years old. You know, like, it's just like you go down the list and it's like they all fill everything you need to be. And I don't know how to say this. I'm not going to be upset if they draft a Mykel Williams, Mykel Williams, however you want to say it. But I just don't know if I'm sold on him being the absolute answer at edge that I think they would think it is. I feel like he's one of those guys where he was a beneficiary of the defense as a whole than anything else. But that's me going off of limited viewing. And it's like, he of course popped in big moments, of course, but it's again, going back to when you watch a Georgia defense versus a Texas, it's like Texas has an offensive line that's nothing to sneeze at, but they're just being overwhelmed most of the time by the individuals they're seeing across the board. And it's not just one purely dominant player. Now, you don't have to be that in order to be worth a shit to be drafted. But I don't know if I'm overly sold on him as an individual that checks all the boxes that I think would eventually take over for this. But let me just preface this and finish it with, I'm not going to be upset with it either. Like, it's just, you're addressing a position of need with hopefully the answer this go around. And if you finally strike gold here with Mikel Williams, it's like, I'm not going to sit here and be upset about it week 8 as he's sitting there with 2 sacks and a rotational defensive edge unit that is just making things happen between him, Russo, AJ Epinesa, Javon Solomon, so on and so forth. Like, I'm not going to be upset with it whatsoever. I think you can't get enough defensive line. There's no such thing. That just doesn't exist. It's just, I don't know if I'm necessarily sold on him compared to other individuals per se that you'd be able to get in that same pick. But if they like him for what it is, I think this, Josh, I think it's safe to say that this front office and coaching staff has at least earned goodwill when it's like, I believe that they know what they're looking for and they'll be able to get at least what they believe the most out of that player moving forward.
How much do you think the Michael Hoyt, Larry Ogunjobi suspensions impacts what the Bills are going to do at defensive line? And I'll even compound that with the reality of the Joey Bosa situation, which is the odds that he plays all 16 games seems slim to none.
In a draft sense?
Yeah.
None at all. Because, yeah. And I only say that because Bean's got enough faith with me where he truly can separate draft from immediate needs. And that is the key in that whole discussion, right? Draft, you draft for maybe immediate needs, but ultimately for the future and for what you are looking for 2, 3, and 4 years down the road. Hopefully even more, of course, in the first round, you know, where you have your Gregory Russos that you lock up and so on and so forth. But you're not just drafting because it's like, oh crap, we got 2 suspensions and an injury prone guy on the roster right now, where this season coming up, we have problems. You don't address that issue per se in the draft. That is something that if you truly have an issue with where you are, you should be trying to find alternatives in the short term via the free agent market and or trade market to just address what you can at a best, you know, penny to the dollar situation there.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think especially when you're picking 30th, the Bills have to have a longer term view than just what do we need immediately. We also know Bean and McDermott both. I mean, I started this segment off saying I don't think that defensive line's where they're going to be, and then I just remembered this is the same unit that took Greg Rousseau and Boogie Basham back to back after taking Epinesa the draft before and then signed Von Miller the next offseason. So I don't want to say I want to fully walk that back, but I think edge specifically is one that until they get it right, they're going to keep taking kicks at the can. And they lost Von Miller, who for what it's worth was one of their better pass rushers down the stretch, probably says a lot about their pass rush. They lost Dwayne Smoot. They did bring in Bosa. They did bring in Hoyt, but Hoyt's not going to be here the first month and a half of the season. So I mentioned a guy I like for the Bills. I want to call one other guy out too before I let you kind of start kicking around some names you like. Shamar Stewart. God. I mean, what a talent. When you talk about an athletic freak, if you saw this guy in Madden, you would be the person that sends an email to EA Sports saying, hey, EA, can we have these draft classes be a little bit more realistic? There's no way a guy that's 300 pounds runs a 4.5. But here we are. What an athlete. Also, what the hell? How can somebody that athletic, that physically dominant, do literally nothing in college? Now he has, you know, like 1.5 sacks. And, you know, if you really want to defend him, there's a highlight tape out there, which exists for every single player where you see some splashes, but just no consistency. And I think Field Yates said it best on ESPN, where it's like, you didn't even see a guy who was like taking on double and triple teams, just making life easier than everybody else. There was just no production. You want to love him more. Probably realistically, Luca, the way the NFL draft works, there's no way a guy with this athletic profile would fall to the Bills at 30. What do you do with this guy, though? Like, who does he even remind you of? I wanted to say Odafe Owe, but even that feels like a stretch. I can't remember a prospect who could potentially go as high as the top 10 with so little production, maybe Josh Allen, and like just all betting on the traits.
Shamar's a wild one, man. Mm-hmm. It's you, Shamar. I feel like in years past, we've talked about it. Shamar is the definition, though, of the item we talked about when it comes to a ball of clay. And you are just like, man, if I can just do this and shape it a little bit this way and do whatever, I don't care that there was only 1.5 sack on record for this guy, and he only forced one fumble, and he barely did anything. This guy is a freak. This guy can do whatever you need him to do on the edge. And, oh, by the way, he's 21 years old. Like, it's just one of those ones where 6'5", 260, 21, has all the intangibles, it feels like. Sub 4.6 40, vert up the butt. Like, it is just like athletic freak. Just get him in the house and figure it out. I'm a guy who drafts on talent, or at least freakishness. And if a Shamar Stewart is sitting there at 30, you know what it reminds me of, Josh, is Nolan Smith falling.
Oh, yeah.
But even Nolan Smith has way more tape in college, obviously. Whew, but yeah. Nolan Smith falling. And it was just like, ooh. Man, I know it's not a Bills kind of guy, but that is someone that's just feels too good to let you just waddle on by and figure it out somewhere else. Like, Shamar Stewart, if he were to get past, I don't know, 22, 24, if I am GM, it's the finger's itching. Like, just, well, I don't care why he's fallen to that point. Let me see who I can call to move up and get him. That feels like the kind of player that you bring in and makes the impact you are looking for, and everything figures it out. Let me just also preface this with, I don't believe Shamar Stewart makes it past 16. So I'm not living in a Candyland world here where I think that's even possible. I don't even think that's remotely possible. Whatever. Move on. I love the love, though, for Shamar Stewart. And the guy, so I think for me to move in, I'm going to look at the interior here. And there's been a lot of discussion about a Kenneth Grant. I look at a Walter Nolan. Mm-hmm. An individual that personally feels more like a Bills interior defensive lineman. And why I say that is I can't get it out of my head that this team just doesn't believe it needs a 325 plus pound, just fat. I was just saying fat in all due respect, fat stalwart in the middle that can just clog things up. They want speed, they want athleticism, they want pass rush ability and all of that, while also being young and moldable to do what they need to do. Walter Nolan fits that bill a little bit more. I think Walter Nolan is kind of just he's not another Ed Oliver, but he's another 3T. He's another pass rush guy. He's another individual that it feels like if they were to go down that road, that to me checks a lot more of the boxes they need. But this is why I don't put him in that Ed Oliver role. He is a little bit more of a run defender than a pass defender. He's not, he uses this athleticism and everything like that, not because he's super fast and he can get to the passer quick, but because he can just shed off of that line, dominate his one-on-ones, and get to the ball carrier quicker. And I think that's something that this defense still needs, because your Ed Olivers don't seem to be able to do that on a regular occurrence. You know, anyone else on the interior defensive line, even your Daquan Jones, like they we haven't had that guy who's able to kind of get that quick shed ability and just get to the ball carrier in the backfield on a regular occurrence in a long time. And that's, to me, where a Walter Nolan seems to thrive out of Ole Miss, for what it's worth. And I know that it feels like he's an individual that people have kind of pegged as that 3T pass rusher, but in my eyes, he's a much better run defender than anything else. And that maybe could be morphed into this kind of, he's not small, he's 300 pounds, 6'4", but where if you're going this smaller package, mm-hmm, and you have Ed Oliver with there, a Walter Nolan feels like he would be someone that maybe could be that hybrid interior alongside him, that you're able to both defend the pass and the run from the inside and maybe figure it out for years to come. That's an individual that I look at personally that feels like one that's more built for the Bills, because he, again, as I mentioned, I do this. We started doing this podcast years ago, Josh, and I always kind of keep these check boxes in my head when we're talking about this stuff. It's like age, you know, top 30 visit, of course, whenever those things start coming out, you know, where do they fit, positions of need, blah, blah, blah. Like, where does it all go? Walter Nolan seems to check boxes in my head a little bit more than a Kenneth Grant, as absolutely insane as that sounds, because their age is about the same, but it's not an age thing. It's just Kenneth Grant doesn't feel like a Bill player, whereas a Walter Nolan does, in a odd way. And also, I feel like everyone in the world, if you follow the Bills and you're listening to us in April right now, you've heard of Kenneth Grant. I'm just throwing out Walter Nolan as a name to please pay attention to, because there could be a real reality where he could be a Bill at pick 30 moving forward.
If you like the idea of Shamar Stewart, I think you should be on board with the idea of Walter Nolan, and he's nowhere near the project that Shamar Stewart is. You mentioned it. He's a very good run defender. Now, he's not, like you mentioned, a prototypical like 330-pound nose tackle, but I think that doesn't have to be a bad thing. I think if you look at a Walter Nolan, he comes into the Bills, he's an athletic freak. And he doesn't have the pass rush repertoire that you're looking for necessarily as a guy that can come in and wreck the game right now, but he has the athletic attributes. You could build that into his game with the right coaching, but instantaneously, maybe similar to how Greg Rousseau came into this league. Greg Rousseau came into the league very raw as a pass rusher. I know he had a lot of sacks in college. There were a lot of cleanup sacks, but he was instantly one of the best run defenders on the Bills defensive line, and then has developed into a very high-end pass rusher on the Bills. I think Nolan has that same upside, and we're talking about the 30th pick in the draft. You don't get Myles Garrett or Abdul Carter or a Bosa brother,
if only,
at the 30th pick, or Hutchinson. unfortunately, you have to take guys and be okay with their flaws, and that's where a Stewart, where it's just like, okay, well, I'm getting blue chip attributes here. Let's see if I can just carve out a player. And Walter Nolan, much the same conversation, although his floor is much higher because of his run defense. I think he's a guy that could absolutely interest the Bills. And I would be curious to see. Bills are usually very forthcoming in these post-draft press conferences. If they were to draft him, I'd be very curious to see if Bean or McDermott would come out and say, no, we're going to start him at nose. Because I view, right now, Ed Oliver is their primary three technique, and obviously they drafted Dwayne Carter last year, so they obviously have high hopes for him, and he's more of a primary three technique too. So I would think that if they drafted Nolan, it would be as a guy to come in and back up Daquan Jones until hopefully ready to take over, but we shall see. Who else you like at defensive tackle, Luca? You mentioned Kenneth Grant. We mentioned Walter Nolan. Is there anybody else here that you think kind of fits the bill? I think as you start scrolling down the list, you start seeing some guys like a Derek Harmon or Darius Alexander that I just not sure that they're going to be the guys that the Bills are interested in. Although I think they, you know, I think they're good players. I don't know that those are the guys that the Bills would like. Who else stands out to you?
No, so the interesting part about the interior defensive line to me is if you're not sold on the individuals we brought up, like, you know, Nolan, Kenneth Grant, so on and so forth, these guys that we view as, let's call them borderline first round picks. This feels as if a draft where they would be evaluating that as an early day three option. And why I say that is because there are guys where I genuinely believe you could find impactful, at least enough in that, let's say, fourth round area in this draft of the, you know, the interior defensive line and or edge for that matter. But it really does feel like it's actually more interior defensive line. It's one of the fattest drafts I can remember.
That's sure is.
Worth, that I, sure that's is. Worth anything. But let me just put it this way. There's a guy I look at, Jordan Phillips, funny enough, out of Maryland. 320 pounds, 6'3". And just everything about him is the classic raw tool, nose tackle, run stuff. Not necessarily your traditional run stuff, you know, even at 320 pounds. But just kind of that stalwart, prides himself at getting at the ball carrier quick in the backfield, so on and so forth. And that's someone that right now you really project to be in that early hundreds pick that you're probably talking late third round, early fourth round, that it, depending on how it all breaks down, you know, if the Bills were to sit where they are with their 10 total picks, they only have three of those being in the first two rounds. They don't have a third round pick for reminder purposes, if anyone's wondering. If they wanted to trade in to that back end of the third round, they have the arsenal to do so, where a Jordan Phillips, funny enough, it's just funny to me that there's another Jordan Phillips at this defensive tackle in this draft. But if they wanted Jordan Phillips to return to the Bills, they could get a new one, being this individual out of Maryland, or even a guy where it's like, this guy doesn't fit the Bills mold, but if you're trying to get a run stuff nose tackle, now bear with me. Jamari Caldwell out of Oregon. You want to talk about a run stuff nose tackle. This guy's 6'1", not very big in that regard, but he's 340 as of measurables, but game day has been listed above 350 pounds. This guy does not move. If you want an individual like that in the fourth round, if not back into third, he feels like an individual that honestly, for as big as he is, actually pops enough in my eyes where it's like, you can get that. You can find that guy in mm-hmm. the fourth round.
Yeah.
And if that's what you're asking for, why spend your 30th overall pick on a Nolan if you genuinely like these guys? And that right there is an example. For instance, I know a site we like to use as a resource. These are individuals, by the way, are listed as 30th and 31st in all of defensive line. That includes edges with these interior defensive line. It just, those are guys though that I've listed off to the side that I'm like, I like what I see out of them, things like that. And it's like, why waste your 30th overall pick on a Nolan if you have any inkling of desire to just fill that role of run stuff and being a run defender and just kind of finally transitioning, let's call it, into getting bigger there and being more of a hassle to deal with and just find these Jamari Caldwells or Jordan Phillips 2.0, if we want to call them that, and move on with your life because you drafted, let's say, Jahdae Barron with the 30th overall pick. Whew, please. Spoiler alert.
Lucas only mentioned him like four times off the air. So.
So you do that and it's like all boxes are checked. You can move on with your life and roles are filled moving forward. And I genuinely, and I bring up these guys though, like there's a Ryle Mills. There's I'm looking at this list here. There's an Aranes Peebles. I think it's Peebles. He's out of Vatek. He's a little bit undersized though. Honestly, a Ty Robinson out of Nebraska. Like there's these guys that honestly, I just, the interior defensive line in like in specific, or just the defensive line in general, it's so deep, as we keep talking about, that it's funny to me that individuals out there feel like the Bills have to go that route in the draft, when you really do need to kind of, instead of looking so focused on that first round, just pull back the curtain a little bit, look at it from a wide scope, and understand that you might be able to find even greater value later on at that position, and therefore allocate your resources elsewhere where maybe it falls off a shelf quicker, like DB or wide receiver or so on and so forth. That I, you know, honestly, my favorite idea, one of my favorite ideas in this draft, is come end of three going into day three, is round three going into day three, is taking at least two defensive linemen, Josh. That's one of my favorite. Like, there are just too many guys in this draft where ultimately that's where maybe you can find that Christian Benford of the defensive line and just make it work and stuff, because it's just so deep and there's a lot of talent with those big bodies on that defensive line. I think the football world has finally caught up in realizing that defensive line gets paid too, because your number one paid player is the quarterback and your next paid is the edge, and your interior defensive lineman can definitely get paid if you're dominant enough, like an Aaron Donald and or all these other there's a guy in Philadelphia who's probably going to get paid big bucks on the interior defensive line soon enough, that it's like, if you can
Jalen Carter, we all were like mind boggling when they got
how he fell to 10. Fall to 10? But if you can be a dominant defensive lineman, the money is there. And therefore, I think that's where the talent has kind of shown itself, where it's like, hey, if you can't be this dominant quarterback and or let's call it wide receiver, where you're making an impact there, there's a lot of money to be had at the defensive line. And now you're seeing a bunch of big talent there that is deep, deep in this upcoming draft.
You mentioned something interesting about supply and demand in the draft. We've all done fantasy football drafts before. And, you know, in a year where, let's say there's 20 receivers that you consider to be really good, but maybe only six running backs, the goal would be to get a running back early and then take advantage of the receiver depth. No different than the NFL draft. If you really want to maximize your picks and you look at this defensive end, defensive tackle situation, you're not going to be in a position, if you're the Bills, to get an Abdul Carter or a Mason Graham. And you start tapping into that next tier, which, as Lucas pointed out already, it's, you know, 15, 20 guys that you can really just shuffle them up and rank them however you want to for the most part. Why would you spend the 30th pick on one of those guys when you could take a cornerback? You could take a receiver, like a Luther Burden, if you wanted to go that route, and then come back in the second round and take a defensive tackle that maybe is not too dissimilar from the edge on your board that you would have taken at 30. So that's one way to kind of maximize the depth of the draft. So, you know, there's a lot of projection that goes into it. You know, we know the Bills are not afraid to make moves up and down. We went a little viral last year when they made a move down. And I would say our worst fears came to light in the AFC championship game, when that particular player, Xavier Worthy, was the best skill position player on the field. Was one game, but was a big game.
Pretty big.
to say it's one game kind of minimizes it. I'm not mad about it still. All right, Luca. Any other edge players we haven't mentioned? Any other defensive tackles we haven't mentioned? Any other comments on this class in general? I think we're both aligned where, yes, the Bills could use, for lack of a better term, a big fatty in the middle, a space heat. I don't think that they're going to be overly aggressive to get that done in round one. They could probably get that done on day three in this draft and get somebody who's competent to compete there. And as far as getting somebody that's going to really come in and help their pass rush, it's hard to do at 30. Those guys don't generally fall that far. There's a reason why Abdul Carter is going to go in the top five of this draft, maybe even the top two. And you know, when you get down to pick 30, you're taking guys with warts that you can live with. So I could see the Bills going edge. I have a harder time seeing them go in defensive tackle in the first round. But in general, Luca, any final thoughts as we kind of put a bow on, this defensive line class in general for the Bills?
No, it's simply put, my overview on this draft when it comes to the Bills is simply, why be so singularly focused on taking defensive line at 30 when it feels like you can easily get someone that is so damn close to the individual you got at 30 at, say, 56, I want to say it is, that we got from the Texans, or 62, which is your own outright pick. I don't know why it needs to be at 30. Now, again, we're just speaking in our own opinion in this instance. Opportunities may present themselves. I mean, we talked about the Shamar situation. If he were to, for whatever reason, fall, variable, change, figure it out, move up, make it happen, so on and so forth, and just count your blessings afterwards. But I just look at it as, you know, I brought up Walter Nolan, and there's a lot of mocks out there with Kenneth Grant. And all I would say is simply, I struggle to understand why it needs to be that way. If there were to be a scenario where Barron's still on the board, or let's say an Amuka Egbuka is on the board, and yet at 56, you could walk away with Alfred Collins out of Texas.
Right.
I don't know if there's much difference between a Walter Nolan and a Alfred Collins. There's a difference. There's a reason one is projected possibly a first round pick, and there's one that's projected for sure a day two guy, like that's earned. But I think that gap is very small, and yet you could address something else where I think Barron is very much so above the nature of the rest, or I think Egbuka really is kind of that line where after him, there is at least decent drop off that it's like, you're not going to be upset with yourself taking that individual and then figuring it out with an Alfred Collins, or I don't know, an Omar Norman Lott out of Tennessee. Like there's just so many guys that I just keep looking at this list. It's like, yeah, I am not one of the ones that subscribes to the idea where 30 has to be a defensive line. I even the first round in general, let's just call it that for what it is. The first pick the Bills take in this upcoming draft doesn't need to be like it even was with AJ Epenesa, where they traded their first away, although that was obviously for different circumstances, but it doesn't need to be defensive line. It there feels like you can navigate this draft coming up because this class is so deep. I find it hard to believe that there aren't other individuals that your Beans and McDermott's haven't fallen in love with that you easily find at picks 56, 62, and so on, or your ability to move into the back end of the third round, which you have a plenty of picks on day three to do so. That I don't know. I can understand where people think that that's a position in need and all of that, but I refuse to subscribe to the belief that that's where they're going to go in the first round. I just don't see how that makes any sort of sense when there's just too much value afterwards.
If the season started today, the Bills would be starting Dane Jackson at cornerback. I watched the same AFC championship game you all did, and as disappointed as I was in the defensive line, my first thought coming out of that game defensively was, man, oh man, is this secondary slow. They did lose Christian Benford on the second drive of the game. That is going to impact your secondary. But one thing that you could really do to slow down the Chiefs last year was play man coverage, and they just did not have the foot speed on defense to play man coverage against Xavier Worthy and Hollywood Brown. And I would love to see the Bills get more athletic at cornerback. And if that means taking a shot at a corner or a safety in round one, coming back with a defensive lineman in round two and taking a shot at a receiver, you know, there's more than one way to skin the cat. I'm always going to be team receiver. I don't love this receiver class, by the way, for what it's worth. I mean, I love the guy at the tippy top, Travis Hunter, but, and I love the other guy at the tippy top that is for sure a receiver. But after that, I think this class is, you know, it's not, not last year's class, I don't believe, but you know, those two guys change things. But, I always want the Bills to try to add more receiving help. Maybe they take a guy like Isaiah Bond in the second round, which is just a different skill set than what they currently have in their wide receiver room. We shall see. But we had a good chat tonight about defensive linemen. I'm still, if I had to bet money, whether it is or it isn't a defensive lineman in round one, I would say it isn't. I know it's like, oh, wow, big, bold statement. You ruled out one position. But no, I mean, I think they're not going to take a linebacker. They're not going to take an offensive lineman. They're not going to take a quarterback, a running back. What? So, you know, I think you start narrowing it down. It's really defensive lineman, defensive back, receiver. Like those are the three positions I think we have to zero in on. And as we get, you know, as we keep checking off days before the draft and Dane Jackson and Jamarcus Ingram are sitting there competing for cornerback two while Taron Johnson's at nickel, not getting any younger. I can't shake this feeling that this team is not only going to go cornerback early, it might go cornerback often in this draft. Really try to put some in the pipeline. But Luca, what are we going to do next on our draft journey? You kind of set the Ooh. Tone for us. We wanted to make sure we hit defensive line tonight, talk about some names that were interesting for the Bills. You know, we're going to run out of weeks here soon, and we also have our mock draft coming up, which we're very excited about. But where should we go next?
I'm thinking corners and DBs. I think rounding out the defense would be the way to do it. We can even include a little bit of a segment on linebackers. You mentioned, I don't see kind of linebackers or anything mm-hmm. of that variety being on the Bills radar, but I think we'll round out the defense next because there is absolutely a great conversation to be had when it comes to the DBs. I mean, the number one DB in this draft also so happens to also be the number one wide receiver in this draft. There's that one that
let's I'm sure just get him.
Unfortunately, it seems to be he's tracking to play for in the division, but not with the Bills. But we'll see how that one goes ultimately, because you know, nothing like Travis Hunter being in the same room as Stephon Diggs. That would be.
Have I told you my favorite college player of all time is Charles Woodson? I watched more college football this year than I had in a long time. Like I usually do draft prep January on. I never watched a ton of college football on Saturdays, just kind of passively.
Yeah.
Travis Hunter is the first player since Charles Woodson.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'm going to root for that guy, even if he's a damn Patriot. Like that, I felt that way about Charles Woodson. I don't care. He never wound up on a Bills rival. He always played on teams that were easy to kind of not be mad about, but I had so much fun watching Travis Hunter in college football these last couple of years. He is the definition of man amongst boys. And I don't say this lightly. I mean, I'm not breaking any ground here. People have said it. I do believe he could be a star at corner and a star at receiver. I don't know that it's realistic to play both in the NFL full time. In fact, I would bet heavily against it. I will not bet heavily against this kid, though. He is one of my favorite prospects I can remember in a long, long time. And like, I want the Giants to get him just because that way he's in the NFC. And I don't want the Patriots to get him. I really don't. But like, what a fun kid. And we're not going to have a whole lot of reason to talk about him on our shows. We're going to talk about DBs next. So I guess we can talk about him a little bit and revisit it at receiver. But just what a fun player. I mean, do you have a player in college football history that you just crushed on so much?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
So yeah. It's funny because this was one of the first seasons in a long time this past season where I finally fell in love with a player. I mean, there's that thing right there. And then there's this thing on my head. Obviously, the person I crushed on this year was none other than Cam motherfucking Scataboo. But the player that was always my crush before then was a guy that no one remembers, no one, but I have his jersey literally hanging in my closet. It is the only Arizona State jersey I own. It's a number 3 and it's none other than Rudy Burgess. This guy turned into nothing. I don't know what he's doing with his life. I hope he's doing well, but he ran the ball, he caught the ball, and he was an electric returner. He was one of those guys in college, Josh, that it was like, just get this guy the damn ball and he will do something special with it. He got a return touchdown against USC. This is going back to like 2007, I want to say. I mean, he would run for like 600 yards in a season, catch it for about 600 yards in a season, and have like 800 yards of return yards. Like that's what this guy would do. And then he would also play DB occasionally, like when they needed him to. And I was like, I love this guy. He was a football player and a half. He was dynamic. And it was just so much fun to watch. And for whatever reason, little Luca, as weird as that sounds, I was fascinated by him. He was one of my favorite players growing up. I loved him. I remember, I don't think he got drafted. He became undrafted, I think, by the Broncos. And he just turned into nothing. And I was so sad because I wanted to see him keep playing. But Travis Hunter really is one of those guys that I understand, an individual like yourself or whatever, where it's like, there's just something different about these guys. And Cam Scatamoo to me is this, obviously it's different. It's for a multitude of reasons, a lot different than Travis Hunter, but it's one of those things where they're more than just a simple position guy. Like it is like, they are clearly out there because they believe they are the best guy and they are going to do in whatever way possible the best thing they can do for their team and do it at a high level. And Travis Hunter, of course, does it incredibly. But then, I mean, I'm just going to keep circling it back because I cannot wait when we get to halfbacks, Josh. I could probably spend an hour. Like Cam Scatamoo's performance against Texas is just single-handedly one of the greatest things we've ever seen in college football. And it's I love anyone that fell in love with Travis Hunter because I am even actively rooting for Travis Hunter. If Travis Hunter were to become a Patriot, it's going to be very difficult for me to root against him. I hope for whenever we get, and we'll talk about this next episode, I hope that whatever team drafts him truly gives him the time and effort to try to be a two-way player because he is that dynamic and that gifted to make it possible. And if they were to pull him back and pigeonhole him, in my opinion, if you were to pigeonhole, I think you would go more the corner route. It's just harder to find those shut down athletic corners than it is a electric receiver. But if they were to do that, I think you're just doing a disservice, not only to him as a player, but just to football as a whole. Like it just, if there seems to be a guy who can truly pull it off, he is one of them. And I'll be rooting for him either way. I'm with you. If he could somehow figure out if he ends up being a Giant and or somewhere else where it's easy to root for, that would be I would be very thankful for that. But ultimately, even if he somehow is fourth overall and ends up being a Patriot, which it really kind of feels like is going to be the case, I'll still be rooting for him in a weird way. It's just, he's an incredible player. Like he's just gifted. He's talented. I've told you, I really refer to him as just like a Patrick Peterson. Mm-hmm. He's that athletically.
That's gifted. A really good comp.
He's just that gifted, especially. And I genuinely believe when Pat Pete was coming out of college, like he could have played receiver. They already had him hold in as a corner, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, he was first team all pro forever at a corner. Like it's just, he's an incredible corner, but it just, that's what he is. He's athletically gifted. He's talented up the ass. Like he is so good that, when we next episode, Josh, we can go into it more, but Travis Hunter is a fascinating one to follow.
One final thought tonight. And this will be a quick conversation. Cause it just dawned on me. Travis Hunter has already made estimated $5.2 million in NIL money. His teammate Shedeur Sanders has already made over $6 million. One wild card with some of these draft picks that these teams have to weigh is what happens when you take these 19, 20, 21-year-old young men and make them rich for the first time in their life while also making them a celebrity. And that's a hard thing for anybody to wrap their head around. And the way the NIL has kind of shifted the draft is a lot of these guys already have money. And in the case of Hunter and Sanders, they're already celebrities. Now, that tends to be the way for guys at the top of the draft. Maybe these guys a little more so because of the Deion Sanders rub. But what impact do you think NIL could have, even in a positive way, on some of these kids? Because I'm trying to think, who was the defensive lineman? His name is going to escape me now. I should be able to find it. There was a defensive lineman that got a bunch of NIL money, and I think maybe he went to Purdue and then just gained a bunch of weight and had a really down year. I can't even find him right now, but I heard about him on the show too. But What do you think about that aspect of now you kind of get to see firsthand what these guys do with money in their pocket? Granted, not high-end NFL money, but life-changing money.
I think NIL overall is great when it comes to individuals going into the NFL. It just gives them, kind of like a, I mean, I'm trying to think of a better way to say it, but I really can't. It gives them an education, ironically enough, on how to handle all of that pressure that comes with just as something as simple as money and financial gain. And not everyone is at the level of Travis Hunter and Shedeur Sanders, like we've mentioned. But overall, I mean, these guys are dealing with representation, mass amount of income, financial pressure and outside pressure due to that, that is, you know, outside of the sport that they're playing, which previous to NIL really was never even presented to them legally until the NFL. But now you at least get that education in it and understanding to it that by the time it's presented to you at the NFL, which it will get even bigger and greater, I think at least they have a foundation that they can lean on and understand from, that it's no longer to the level of culture shock. It's no longer to the level of misunderstanding and something where, like you're referring to, you have individuals that as soon as it comes to them, they kind of all of a sudden regress and fall back to bad habits and or just become nothing due to just the simple nature of having that sort of financial gain as well as pressure from outside forces. But I think it's good for the game of football. Let me just preface that. I think NIL for the game of football is very good. I think for collegiate sports in its current format is a whole nother discussion, because as we sit here with collegiate sports also as a hot topic due to March Madness, I don't think anyone wanted to sit here seeing all ones in the Final Four. And yet that's a reality we're in a very chalky bracket. And NIL seems to be a massive culprit of that, that I'm not trying to get on my soapbox or, you know, grandstand here about it. But I think NIL is a fantastic thing for football and may not be the greatest of things for everything else in collegiate sports that, you know, from an entertainment value. But to rind it out, I mean, it just simply put, I expect the Hunters, the Shedeur Sanders, the, you know, the all these other individuals in the draft that have already experienced that, that will be taken high end in the draft. It shouldn't come to a surprise to them. Nothing should really come to a surprise to them. And overall, they should be able to handle it with ease and be able to transition to the NFL more smoothly, that, you know, your Abdul Carter will find his footing pretty quick and feel like more of a vet quicker than your average rookie, say 5-10 years ago.
NIL also brought us back college football for PlayStation, which we are eternally grateful for. So that's good. But yeah, the all 4-1 seeds making it the Final Four and not even particularly close to being defeated along the way is certainly not ideal. Although I got all four. It's almost embarrassing to admit you got all four Final Four teams. Like, look at me.
Congrats. You went all chalk.
So I'll admit something on this podcast real quick. I did not watch a lick of college basketball this year. I'm an NBA guy. I mean, Nuggets, all this stuff. So I pay attention to college basketball really with an eye on who the NBA players are going to be. I just, with stuff going on in my life, college basketball just never made it to my radar. I filled out a bracket 5 minutes before it was due. Literally went to DraftKings, pulled up the in round one, just picked all the guys that were the teams that were favored to win, because why would I not? And then for the rest of the rounds, I just sorted it by odds to win the championship and just did that way. Like, I was like, hey, I'll let Vegas do this one for me. But I did know enough about college basketball to know that there were like five or six teams that were clearly above the rest. So I'm not shocked that the 4-1 seeds made it, but it hasn't been an overwhelmingly like interesting tournament. There's not that Cinderella story. It was 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, and 1-3. Woo-hoo! All right, Luca, next time we are on the air, we're going to be talking about defensive backs as we move forward in April, and we will get closer and closer to this Bills draft pick. Speaking of the Bills and the draft, we are going to be live on YouTube the night of the draft. It'll be Luca. It'll be me. It'll be potentially Stokes. We'll be doing every single pick. Please, if you are listening to this, venture over to YouTube, Bills Chat on YouTube, and like and subscribe. We are trying to get close to 500 subscribers. If we can do that before the draft, we will have a special giveaway to be determined later or to be announced later. But we're trying very hard to get to that 500 mark. This has been a slow build for our YouTube channel. We have not been promoting it very much, but we're trying to get back in the swing of things. So if you are somebody who listens on Apple or Spotify, we appreciate the hell out of you. But if you could just take a moment, if you like what we do, and go over and follow us on YouTube, we would very much appreciate it. For Luca, I am Josh McCarty. We will talk to you next time on Bills Chat.